Okay, welcome everybody to our FNC Office Hours call. Today we're so lucky that we get to have an amazing presentation, Confessions of a Reformed Pharmacist, what your doctor or pharmacist doesn't tell you about your prescription drugs. So we have Mahala, and how do you say your last name, Mahala?
Greta.
Greta here with us, who is a pharmacist and an NEPT student, also in the Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Program. She is an ERC co-chair for the ERC program, and so we're thrilled to get to pick her brain and learn about what your doctor or pharmacist doesn't tell you about prescription drugs. So welcome, Mahala. I would love for you to just give us a little bit of a background about you and what brought you here, and then we'll move into your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. So I have been a pharmacist, a clinical pharmacist and a research pharmacist for the past 19 to 20 years, almost. Pretty much half of my career, I worked as a clinical pharmacist in the hospital, and then I switched to research. And as a research pharmacist, basically you are part of the clinical trials process, and you dispense investigational drugs. But in the process, you learn all the regulatory stuff that is all in the background of the clinical trials. I have a PharmD degree from University of Southern California, and I have a bachelor's degree in pharmacological chemistry from University of California at San Diego. So that's in a nutshell about me. And what brought me here is looking back, and even when I was working in the hospital as a pharmacist, I always was baffled about the number of medications that were prescribed to patients that were admitted in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And literally it was, this brings me actually to my first slide. Literally, we will get a prescription and it would say, oh, in case the patient gets headache, give them Tylenol. In case the patient gets this kind of ache, give them ibuprofen. If the patient gets fever, give them this. If the patient has acid reflux, give them that. If they are constipated, give them that. If they're having diarrhea, give them that. And so literally every prescription that I would have to enter in the computer and then dispense to the patient were about 20 to 30 drugs. And so this is a cartoon, but it's supposed to be funny, but it's really not that funny because it's really, really happening in reality. And the pharmacist says each capsule contains your medication plus a treatment for each one of your side effects. So at first when I saw it, I was like, haha, but it's really not funny because their patient admitted to the hospital and this is exactly what happens to them. And unfortunately, this happens in outpatient settings, not just in the hospital. Also, the cartoon in the right, the pharmacist says, oh, this is the medication you were given, but that will cause nausea, for which you're on this other medication, which will induce temporary blindness, but I will contract that with yet another medication. And so the patient is looking at 20 to 30 drugs. So just a little bit like, what is a side effect and what do we care? Why are we talking about them? The side effects are expected and they are known to affect the patient. And this is something that's known from clinical trials. And, but the term side effect is usually not that good, because side effects can be good side effects and they can be bad side effects. So like, for example, take the medication Viagra. It has a side effect which basically helps pulmonary hypertension, pulmonary pressure goes down. And so it's actually used in terminal patients that are that have pulmonary hypertension, and nobody would have thought about that about Viagra, right? So that's a good side effect. And so because of that, it's proposed that we actually talk about adverse drug reactions instead. And that's a response to a drug which is unintended and which occurs at doses that are normal, like, so you're not overdosing the patient, and that can be used for prophylaxis, diagnosis, or even for dose modifications. So like if you are trying to get a patient off an antidepressant medication, you know, you have to be very careful, because if you go too fast, it can cause severe side effects. So that's an adverse drug reaction. But then there's adverse drug events. And so a reaction can become an event when that reaction causes actual injury. And again, it can happen from just regular doses. It's not from overdoses. On occasion, adverse drug events can result from medication errors, but more often than not, actually it happens at regular doses, and it's unexpected, and you don't know who's going to have an adverse drug event or not. So just to look a little bit at statistics, about 1.3 million patients make it to the emergency room department because of adverse drug events. And about 350,000 of those actually end up hospitalized for further treatment. So obviously they were injured. And the third statistic is pretty sobering, because it says that it's the third leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. So that's just to put it in perspective. So in other words, drugs are not something that we should be playing with. just one more time, side effects are adverse drug reactions. So if you see that in literature, kind of people going back and forth, side effects are adverse drug reactions. Adverse drug reactions may become adverse drug events. And then I have my own definitions of side effects. Some are noticeable side effects, such as headaches, nausea, drowsiness, and these are usually mentioned in the package insert. And then there's the lesser known side effects, which are nutrient deficiencies, and these are not mentioned in the package insert more often than not. And the reason for that, it has to do with the way the clinical trials are set up. So when there's a clinical trial, there's a protocol, and in the protocol, they have to basically foresee everything. And sometimes it's hard to foresee, based on the mechanism of action or the proposed mechanism of action, what could be affected, but they try. And so based on that, the patient will be, there will be assessments of the patient, sometimes monthly, sometimes more often, you know, depending on each clinical trial. And so when the patient comes back, they ask a number of questions that are usually very specific to see whether any expected side effects will have happened. And then they would also do certain tests, like lab tests. And unless they foresee a certain nutrient to be depleted, chances are they're not going to do a test to check. So if a medication is for hypertension, they are probably not going to look for B12 deficiency, and they're not going to do that test. So that's why a lot of times these nutrient deficiencies are not really something that happens in the package insert. I mean, it doesn't get mentioned in the package insert. The way some of them are actually, we end up knowing about them, it has to do with phase 4 of clinical trials, which is really post-marketing. And in post-marketing, both the doctor and the patients are actually advised that if they experience any kind of weird symptoms, and especially if they are really adverse, to call a hotline and so if enough people across the country call and they say, hey, my pinky hurts and I ended up in the emergency room because of that, Eventually that will make it into the package insert, because FDA will make them put it in the package insert. But if nothing like that gets reported, a lot of times nutrient deficiencies will go unknown. So nutrient deficiencies, 50% of the drugs are approved that are approved in US commonly deplete nutrients, and about 30% of the side effects from medications are related to drug-induced nutrient deficiencies. So that's pretty, it's a pretty hefty amount. And so I think when we take medications, we should really be mindful about these deficiencies and either counteract them with our lifestyle, and especially in long-term use, we should consider supplementing. So why do we even care about the nutrients? The way I see it is that the way the house needs concrete and wood and all kinds of other material, the human body needs carbs, proteins, and fats for the foundation. But if you just have the bricks and the wood and you don't have the nails and the glue and whatever else they use to make a house, that house will never stand just with the wood and the concrete, right? In the same way, if we only have carbs, proteins, and fats, but we don't have the minerals and the vitamins, our body eventually will deteriorate because it's not going to have the power to regenerate and to repair things as it goes, which we know that happens every day, every moment. So there's four types, and this is not a complete list. It's just some of the most common mechanisms of nutrient depletions that I can think of. One is literally the drug literally just binds the minerals and the vitamins, and so then they get excreted. They never even get absorbed. If the acidity, the GI acidity, especially in the stomach, is too high or too low, the drugs may not ever even be digested. The food may not be digested. And so the nutrient absorption will be poor or completely stopped. So if the medications inhibit enzymes that involve the transport of nutrients around the body, we would also be in trouble. And so one drug that I can think of is vitamin B12. So on occasion you hear of patients that say, well, I've been taking vitamin B12, but my symptoms don't go away. I feel the same way. I'm still tired. I have the same symptoms. What's going on? And the reason could be because vitamin B12 does not get absorbed. So you just ingest it, but it never gets absorbed. Sometimes that's also caused because of the lack of intrinsic factor, but other times it's just literally, which intrinsic factor is an enzyme that you really need to absorb it, right? Drugs can inhibit enzymes that are involved in activating nutrients. And vitamin B12 is a good example here again, because most of the times if you ever get in the hospital, if you go to any pharmacy, literally even grocery stores that sell drugs, they will sell you vitamin B12, but it will most often it will be in the form of cyanocobalamin, which then it will undergo numerous reactions in the body to become methylcobalamin, which is the active form of vitamin B12. And if you don't have the nutrients required for those reactions in between, you will never get methylcobalamin. And although you took the medication, the supplement, and you absorbed it from the stomach into the blood, it never made it to the active form, and the active form is what we need to get better. So this is one way this mechanism would work. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about medications for hypertension and for diabetes today. And I'm going to talk about each class of this medications and what kind of depletions they cause. So one of the most common class of antihypertensives that we use are the ACE inhibitors. Those are the most common drugs in that class, the captopril and allopril, all the prils, and they cause a number of deficiencies, but I highlighted magnesium and coenzyme Q10 because I want you to observe a trend, and I want, and eventually we're gonna talk about this nutrients. So then there's the angiotensin receptor blockers, the irbesartan, sartan, all the sartans. They also cause magnesium and coenzyme Q10 deficiency, as well as zinc, phosphorus, and calcium. The beta blockers deplete coenzyme Q10 and melatonin. And the calcium channel blockers deplete coenzyme Q10 and magnesium also. And then there's three types of diuretics. The loop diuretics are the Lasix and Bumex, and these ones deplete a lot of vitamins and also magnesium and other minerals like potassium, calcium, sodium, and zinc. And then there's a hydrochlorothiazide as a thiazide diuretic, and this diuretic is very common. In fact, a lot of medications are there's two drugs into one, and so the medication might have a certain name, and then at the end it says HCT. Well, that HCT really means that there's hydrochlorothiazide in the medication, and a lot of patients don't even realize that they are taking two drugs, and each one of the drugs has its own depletions. And so you are having now a synergy of depletions of magnesium and coenzyme Q10. And then there's a potassium sparing diuretics, and that's because they notice that a lot of diuretics deplete the potassium, sodium, magnesium. And potassium is very important because then they get cardiac symptoms. So this is a new class. So why do we even care about magnesium? Magnesium is important because it's present as either coenzyme in more than 300 biochemical reactions in the body. And it's actually the nature's calcium channel blocker. And if you remember, one of the antihypertensive medications was calcium channel blockers. And so, the calcium channel blockers, though, were causing magnesium deficiency. So is it possible that the patient who presents with hypertension had probably magnesium deficiency in the first place? And instead of putting them on medication, which will further deplete the magnesium, we could have just given them magnesium and maybe look for a reason why they are depleted. Low magnesium also causes high blood pressure, as I just mentioned. So it's a vicious cycle. Low magnesium also can cause high blood sugar. So for each molecule of sugars, you need three molecules of magnesium to process them. So magnesium is super important in preventing diabetes. And this is a chart that I just wanted to point out how many nutrients, when they are depleted, they can present as hypertension. So it's possible that your prescription drugs, if we are not mindful about replenishing the nutrients, might actually keep us sick or get us even sicker. So again, hypertension, you get on the medications cause low magnesium causes hypertension, so it's a vicious cycle. Then low magnesium can cause diabetes, you get put on diabetes medications, will cause more depletions, which will lead to more symptoms, which will cause the doctor to put the patient on even more medications, which, so, you know, the process goes on. And this is just a visual for food sources for magnesium. It's basically everywhere. It's very easy to be mindful about the foods we eat that contain magnesium. So basically chocolate, that's my favorite, yay. And then avocados, bananas, parsley, and a lot of nuts contain magnesium. So let's talk about diabetes now. The most common class of anti-diabetics is sulfonylureas, and these are pretty much the first line of therapy when someone gets diagnosed with diabetes. And these drugs also deplete coenzyme Q10 and vitamin B12, as well as B9 and vitamin E. Then another famous medication would be the metformin, which almost probably every patient that I know that has diabetes gets put on metformin. And this one also causes coenzyme Q10 deficiency and vitamin B12 deficiency, as along with many others, other vitamins. And the insulin depletes DHEA, which we can see how these patients, probably their hormones will be all messed up. And probably this is a good explanation why a lot of patients, once they get on insulin, they start gaining a lot of weight. So I made this table just to basically show you how many classes of anti-diabetic drugs are. And I gave you the most common side effects and the nutrient deficiencies, whether they were known and if they are reported in literature. So there's a lot of classes that reads that there's no research supporting nutrient depletions. So in other words, they just don't know. But if you look at the side effects, and if somebody has vomiting and diarrhea, we know that when we vomit or we have diarrhea, we are basically losing a lot of electrolytes like sodium, potassium, chloride, magnesium. So it would be pretty safe to say that if somebody gets chronic diarrhea from the miglitol, they will eventually experience nutrient deficiencies because of that. If you look at the pioglitazone and rosiglitazone, one of the side effects is heart failure. And we know that coenzyme Q10 deficiency can cause heart failure. So it's pretty safe to say that probably these drugs are depleting coenzyme Q10. So this is more like just, this chart is here just for you to just take a look at it. So why do we even care about vitamin B12? Because it protects the nerve and the brain cells from free radical damage. It's shown to reduce pain associated with neuropathy, contributes to the creation of healthy DNA and RNA, which is the genetic material. So if that doesn't get renewed and repaired, we'll be in big trouble. It works with other B vitamins to form red blood cells, to support the immune system, improve the mood, protect the cardiovascular system, and maintain overall energy levels. And if we don't have enough of it, people usually complain of fatigue, digestive issues, nausea, and loss of menstruation. And then in more advanced cases, there's nerve pain, there's mental health disorders, infertility, impaired immune function, and anemia. And here's another visual for food sources. B12 is much more common in animal products. There's very few plants like mushrooms and oats that have it. And so sometimes when somebody is on a vegan diet, it's a good idea to check periodically just to make sure that the vitamin B12 was not depleted. And, you know, if they are, just supplement in order to maintain health. So what about coenzyme Q10? Why do we care about that one? And we care because it assists hundreds of enzymatic reactions. It makes energy by sparking the production of the energy molecule ATP. So we know ATP, without ATP, life doesn't exist. It has a famous role in heart health, and deficiency of it can cause congestive heart failure. And I have read about a famous physician who specializes in heart failure, and he was mentioning that he basically checks all his patients that come to his office. The first time he checks their coenzyme Q10 level, and more often than not, they are deficient. And he just puts them on coenzyme Q10, and their symptoms improve without any other form of treatment, which is absolutely spectacular, because congestive heart failure is not a fun diagnosis, and the symptoms are pretty brutal. So coenzyme Q10 is also a powerful antioxidant and protects cells from DNA damage. So it may also, because it does that, people say it might actually have some anti-cancer effects. So just to reiterate, deficiency in coenzyme Q10 may cause heart failure, cancer, hypertension, and diabetes. And another visual for food sources, coenzyme Q10 is in a lot of foods, both vegetables and meat products. So it's really everywhere. It's only if people would just have a balanced diet and rich in nutrients and not anything with preservatives and, you know, pre-made. This is just another visual. The Krebs cycle is the energy production cycle, and this is how we get our ATP. This is one way. And all the little circles around, whether they're green, yellow, or red, will show you nutrients that are needed for all these reactions to happen. And if you take a look, there's coenzyme Q10 and B12 twice in the cycle, and coenzyme Q10 is needed once. But then if you go to the electron transport chain, basically that's the one in the bottom. In order to get from first product to the second, to the third and fourth, you need coenzyme Q10 at every single step. And so if that doesn't happen, ATP cannot be formed from ADP to ATP. So basically biochemistry just doesn't happen when we do not have coenzyme Q10. And so we do not have energy. And more importantly, we don't have cellular energy, which is really needed for health. Okay, not sure what's happening. Okay, so I'm not sure what's happening. My computer is slow. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so this is another chart that shows how many minerals and vitamins we need. And when we are deficient in them, they all may cause diabetes. So the prescription drugs, if we're not mindful of replenishing nutrients, whether with diet or with supplementation, it may make us sick or keep us sick. And this is what I'm saying. Let yourself give yourself the medicine that you really need. Do we really need the pills? And I really do believe that there is a time when medications are needed. And if somebody has uncontrolled hypertension, we need to prevent them from getting a stroke or a heart attack. But while we're looking for the root cause, and then throughout the lifespan of the patient, having a healthy diet, nutritious diet is very important, and we may even need to supplement. And once we find the root cause of the symptoms and we fix that, then they might be able to actually get off their pills. Unfortunately, we live in a society that is highly seeking toxic pills and surgery because they want a quick fix. And unfortunately, too often, they're not interested in lifestyle change. And maybe you have heard of people say, well, if I don't have to, if I can't have my donuts, I'd rather die. And hopefully soon more people will go for the lifestyle. This pharmacist seems to have figured it out that stress, it's pointless to take medications if you're stressed and you're not dealing with that. And so he's telling this lady that the antidepressants work best if you take them with water lapping near your hammock on a Caribbean beach. And I totally agree with that. Not that we can all go to the Caribbeans right now, but the idea being that if we deal with the stress, sometimes just by doing that, we could actually be off medications. Any questions?
Yeah. Hello. Here we can open it up for questions.
Yeah, let me stop sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now it's kind of dark in here. Let me see if I can turn on some other lights.
All right, I have a few questions, but I'd love to open it up. Anybody have some questions right now for Mahela?
Is it better? Yeah.
Well, my name's Marilyn, and I was just wondering, are we able to receive a PDF of those charts or a copy of the charts later? Because they're so valuable, and there's so much information just to, in a picture format to look at.
Yeah, I will. I don't know, how do we do this, Kimberly? Do I send them to you or?
Send them to me and then I'll get them. Yes, I'll get them to some of the posts on the site.
Oh, thank you so very much, because I missed about the first 15 minutes too. So I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We'll have the replay up and we'll have the PDF of the slides for you, Meryl.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, who else? Questions? I'm really curious, Mahela, when did you start noticing in your patients the common nutrient deficiencies?
So all I knew when I was a traditional pharmacist, I just knew that how do you explain, and I kept thinking, like, how do you explain all these patients on so many drugs? And that it always baffled me, and I kept thinking there's something wrong with a patient, because I was like, who swallows that much medication, right? But then when I actually started looking at the functional medicine world, and I started learning about nutrients, and I read, there's another pharmacist, her name is Susie Cohen, and she wrote a million books. And that's what she wrote about, how drugs cause nutrient deficiencies. And when she mentioned that, I'm like, that's when it clicked for me, because I was like, oh, so diarrhea, you're losing your electrolytes, boom. Like, you know, those are the nutrients. We all knew, like, there's some medications that we do know, like we do know about metformin and B12 deficiency and cholesterol medications and coenzyme Q10, and some more progressive doctors actually will supplement with that when they prescribe to the patients. Not as often as I would like that to see, but it still happens. So that's when I started looking. And again, when I started reading about functional medicine and looking at the root causes, like, yeah, like what if, you know, all you have is magnesium deficiency and you don't need antihypertensives, you know? Is that gonna work for everybody? No. But is that worth looking first thing? Yes. And so that's how I came around.
I love how you really kind of define the fact that sometimes these medications are necessary, but hopefully we can use it as a tool till we get to the root cause. Mm-hmm. To keep them alive, to keep them from being from suffering so drastically. And then when we understand the root cause, to be able to implement tools to help heal the root cause versus continue to use that medication for a Band-Aid. And I'm curious, like, how many of your patients are open to that, are open to reducing meds or hopefully getting off their meds completely in favor of lifestyle?
Well, from what I see, a lot of patients are like, yeah, I like that. But what happens, there's a lot of patients that kind of trust functional medicine, but they're really not fully in. And so then they go back to the doctor and they talk to the doctor. And the doctor says, oh, absolutely not. You cannot get off your cholesterol medication because it will kill you. And so that's kind of where I see a lot of people kind of change their mind. I see a lot of fear mongering when they go and they talk to their doctor instead of bringing up the research and really looking at it. The doctor just goes, no, it will kill you. Although actually there are trials that have shown that cholesterol medications do not improve the mortality rate at all. So just because the number goes down, mortality from heart attacks is not lowered at all. So then what's the point, in my opinion? Mm-hmm. So other than you get a bunch of side effects. But again, if they want to do that, if somebody has 300 the cholesterol, that would be great. But do you do it for long term? Maybe not, right? So,
And I think being able to point clients in the direction of some of these studies so that they can look at them and then share them with their physician. Like, mm-hmm. Here's what I think, what do you think? And I feel like if I help educate the client and teach them how to educate their physician, mm-hmm. it's more beneficial because then more physicians are getting access to some of this information.
Yeah. And I'm working on doing exactly that. I'm working to get clinical trials so I have them handy so I can just give them to the patient and say, I don't know what your doctor tells you, but this is what research says. So, you know, you might want to talk to your doctor about it, or sometimes patients can take decisions on their own, but when you show them evidence. So,
Well, and I think especially when it comes to tapering medications that like you mentioned earlier, some of those medications have to be tapered very carefully and strategically. Mm-hmm. And so often that people don't do that because they're so scared. So to give them some tools and support, and if their doctor is not comfortable with it, remind the client that they're the consumer. They get to choose their doctor. They can find another doctor that might be more open to supporting them in reducing or eliminating medications completely. Mm-hmm. There are doctors out there that will support you in that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And some people forget that they're the consumer. You get to choose. Yeah. If your doctor is not understanding or on board with your desire to reduce or eliminate medications, look for one that is more open to that to support you with.
I have a question that's just, I'm looking maybe for some advice. And I have had some mild AFib for a few years now, done all the testing. I live in Canada. It's put down to paradoxal. I have a couple of physicians who are trying to put me on beta blockers, blood thinners, and I've resisted for the last year or two. Every time I get a little run of, you know, AFib for an hour or a bit or two or six, eight, I've never been to a hospital, never been admitted. But I've done the 7-day heart monitor and day 24-hour ones. So we kind of know what's going on. But I just, you know, I'm resisting the meds. And your chart certainly piqued my, you know, thank you to myself for resisting them at this point, because I'm not a real serious candidate as such, I don't believe yet. I know it could get worse. I have Dr. Sinatra's book. I don't know if that was the doctor you made reference to or not. I have taken some CoQ10 and magnesium and a couple other things. And I'm just wondering what your recommendation going forward for me would be to do.
Yeah, so actually there's Dr. Carolyn a book about magnesium. It's called Miracle Magnesium or Magnesium Miracle or something like that. Carolyn Dean, D-E-A-N. And she actually talks about arrhythmias, and she does talk about how they often are caused by magnesium deficiency. The key with magnesium, though, is that a lot of times magnesium doesn't get absorbed. More salts, a lot of depending on the salt type of magnesium, some are more absorbed than others, but overall, none of them are really absorbed well. I think the magnesium glycinate is the most absorbed, and we're talking about 30% or something like that. So sometimes the dose is very important. Dr. Carolyn Dean actually has an ionic form of magnesium, and so she claims that her product actually gets absorbed fully, and so it won't cause diarrhea, because that's the problem. When magnesium doesn't get absorbed, it acts as a laxative. So that's why people can't really go up on the dose because of the side effects. But with her magnesium that she came up with, it gets all absorbed and it goes to the cells where it's needed.
Okay.
I can tell you that, for example, in the hospital, when we were responding to codes, all of a sudden, like the first drug of choice, they would tell me to make a magnesium drip, and we resuscitate the patient when they would have arrhythmias, and you know that the patient was coding. So magnesium seems to be highly important. And another thing is the blood tests, the common ones when you go to the doctor and they do the CMP or the BMP, they basically are looking in the serum, and only 1% of the magnesium lives in the serum. So if that lab test shows normal levels, means absolutely nothing, because 99% of the magnesium does not live in the serum. And by the time the serum level is depleted, you're probably in ICU coding. So so basically an appropriate lab to do is something that looks inside the cell for magnesium to see the magnesium level in there. And I know lately some doctors started looking at red blood cell levels, so that's a more appropriate level. And again, you need to worry about absorption, whether it gets where it needs to go. And it might be just magnesium, maybe not, but sometimes it's toxicities from heavy metals, from infections, from that can cause arrhythmias, but sometimes it can be just magnesium deficiency.
So other than that, I'm really healthy. Like, I mean, we get the basic blood panels, and I'm not on any medication right now. I haven't been, you know, everything else is ticking off just fine. But as I've aged, I'm 67 now, definitely outside of menopause. And it just seems like it's just been a slow pattern from perimenopausal, to date, and it, you know, I can have one a day and then I don't have one for 2 weeks and then it comes back. And so, and I've had my, you know, my heart checked out and they just don't seem to see anything. So that's good advice. I'll look at that, and I'll look at taking more magnesium and better form of magnesium. Cause right now I'm taking the glycine, whatever you called it.
The glycine. That's
what I'm taking. I'm taking maybe, you know, 200 to 400 megs a day. Maybe I'm not taking enough.
Possible. It depends. If you are deficient, maybe you're not taking enough. If you're not deficient, then maybe that's not the answer, but I would look fully to make sure that that's what it is. And if it is,
my diet's really healthy. I eat lots of greens. I have a big green drink that's all greens every day. I'm not into preservatives. Everything's homemade, basically. Yeah. All your food things that you showed for the fish and for the nuts and all the greens. I mean, that's me. We eat the colorful range of, so it's, you know, I don't think I'm really deficient too much, but I might be in something because something's not quite working right in my body. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Just keep in mind that sometimes we eat, some of us do eat well, but if there's any kind of GI issues and the absorption is impaired, that doesn't make it where it needs to go. And that was one of the mechanisms I explained about, like, how people get nutrient deficient. So, so you might want to take a look. Is it truly that your GI is fully functioning? Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. But then I would start with ensuring, are you really deficient or not in magnesium?
Mm-hmm.
And
so I'm gonna plot on myself and look for root causes and just monitor myself closely. But I'm resisting the beta blocker and the blood thinner, and my doctor doesn't even want to talk to me because if I'm not gonna follow her advice, then.
What they're trying to prevent is because when there's AFib, there's clot formation, and so that's why they are talking about the blood thinners to prevent that. But it would be way better to just stop the AFib if you could, you know, right?
Right. Because even I've just looked at the, you know, the newer blood thinners, I know not Warfarin, but some of the newer ones like Eliquis and the other ones, I forget the other name that runs with Eliquis, but I mean, they're a list of side effects of holy moly, don't think so.
Yeah. And even aspirin, like I actually wrote a book. I have an ebook that I'll give you access to all of you if you want to take a look at it. But it's an ebook on over-the-counter drugs and the deficiencies that they cause. And aspirin is actually many times recommended for patients like you to prevent, basically to thin out the blood. But aspirin has never been through clinical trials. In fact, it's been just grandfathered in. When FDA was invented, they just thought like, oh, let's just take aspirin and put it as medication. But nobody ever tested it. And with the list of side effects of it, knowing what I know about clinical trials, that drug would never make it to the market today. It's too toxic. So, and it's on the shelves. You can buy it like you buy bread, and people use it many times like they use bread. So so that's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. I don't use much aspirin at all, hardly nothing. So, but thank you for your good advice. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Okay, what else? Other questions? Questions about this topic? It's so fascinating to me how the nutrient deficiencies are linked to the disease. So then you get the medication for the disease that causes a nutrient deficiency. So you're on this whole hamster wheel, right?
And you never get better.
Right.
And you never get better. And so what we see, for example, hypertension, they start you, the first visit, the doctor talks to you about lifestyle modifications. Then they talk about, well, let's put you on the first medication that's usually a diuretic. Then they go to ACE inhibitors. And then the third one can be either a calcium channel blocker, a beta blocker, something like that, depending on the patient. They'll depends what they'll choose. And how do you explain that? Like, you are on a medication, you should be better, right? Not your hypertension should be controlled. And instead they go to the maximum dose, then they go to the next class of medications, they go to the maximum dose, and then they go to the next class of medications until they reach the maximum dose, and they start shifting them around. And how do you explain that? If it's just pure benign hypertension out of the blue, why isn't the drug fixing me, right? Instead, you get worse and worse. And as I said, it's very common that after patients start antihypertensives, a few years down the line, they get diabetes. Surprise, right? Because it's all the nutrients. And it's very classic, like working in the hospital, it's like, boom, antihypertensive, 1, 2, 3, anti-diabetics, and then the list goes on. So
they look at it like these diseases are kind of linked, diabetes and hypertension, but no one ever talks about the medication causing the link between these two, right? And the nutrient deficiencies causing the link.
Right. They just know that more often than not, diabetic patients will have hypertension and the other way around, but they don't think there's a correlation, but I think there is. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Clearly. Well, you had some really good resources in your beautiful presentation. That was really awesome. I love that you're giving access to people to that. Just the chart kind of showing the consistent over and over again, the same nutrients that are linked to these other diseases, right? So if we can kind of visually see that and share that with our family members or our clients that are on these medications, just to not tell them to change their medications, but to be aware of the possible effects of these diseases, not just side effects or these medications, they're effects, right? Maybe not wanted effects, but they're effects.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there are side effects. I mean, adverse drug reactions, right? And like, I don't even know that people out there really know that the third leading cause of death in the United States is medications. And it feels to me, because especially like I used to round with a transplant team at one of the hospitals that I worked at, and the doctors were super upset because the patients would come in their office and be like, I need you to put me on this medication because I saw commercials. Yeah. And they're like, wait, I'm the doctor and you tell me what's your problem and then I'll tell you what you're going to be on, right? And so the doctors were really, really upset because really the TV really dictates a lot of the medications. And the pharma, like we could tell, like we were laughing as we were entering orders. Like we would be entering orders and we would get orders. And all of a sudden, all the orders were for the same drug. And we would be making fun because we would be like, oh yeah, the rep was here, you know. The rep was here and he hit all the patient, all the physicians, and all the physicians were prescribing the medication that day. And we're like, does this patient really need this? Or it was just like pharma driven, right? So a lot of things like that are going on. And I'm not saying, I mean, physicians really do try to help patients, but I think the system is broken and we get what we get.
Right. And we're blessed to have medications for acute issues that we can help negate some dangerous symptoms as we search for the root cause, right? Yeah. And as we look into what are the potential lifestyle and nutritional solutions that are the long-term solution versus the Band-Aid that the medication really should be.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a temporary support system to end suffering and to get you through an acute phase, and then, but not chronically used for lifestyle and nutritional disorders. Right.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So here's the link to the ebook.
Oh, wonderful.
Drugnutrients.com. And it will ask you to put your name and I don't remember what else. But don't worry. I mean, you have to do it to access it, but you can print it out. Or actually, I have it as an ebook. You can see it on the thank you email that you'll get. So
Well, I think you're providing such an important service, Mihaela, to really help people understand and get educated about what they're putting in their body and the possible effects that aren't told to them by their doctor, that aren't even in the insert and not online, right? Mm-hmm. The information is not there. So you're providing such an important service to help educate people mm-hmm. so that they can make informed decisions.
Yeah. Right?
I'm not saying no to medication, but being informed right. on how and when to use it appropriately, safely, and what are the possible side effects.
Yes.
Go into it with that information so that they're making the best choice, most informed choice possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's the informed decision. I think that's the key. And the other one is, well, you're dealing with this. Let's fix what caused it. And then you won't have to feel, but it's also true that patients go into the doctor's office looking for a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is our culture. A lot of it is our broken healthcare system. But I think the information is there and people really can take control of their health. So.
Yeah, but they need to know that there's options, yes. right? Doctors give you what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And often don't know any other way. And so you might not be getting as much information from your doctor because they simply don't know. Like they want to help you and right. their way to help you is with medications because that's what they're trained on.
Right.
So empowering right. people to know that there's options, right? That they can look into other options and make a decision after yeah. they got information from other sources.
Right. And that's how it is for pharmacists as well. Like, until I saw this side, I was like, I was always baffled. And now I'm like, oh, you know, so it's you know what you were taught. And,
right.
you know.
We do with the best intentions. We use what we know. But to support people, I think, in being able to tune into their internal wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. And to get all the information so that then they can ask their internal healer,
mm-hmm.
what is yeah. right for me? What is the best choice for me right now?
Yeah.
And to not settle for just what one opinion says, but to really take, be proactive and yeah. look. I love yeah. that you're offering these resources on your website and that you're supporting people in this informed consent, right? Like really yeah. learn what you're deciding to put in your body. Same thing goes for nutrients and herbs, I think. Mm-hmm. Right, because those can be used inappropriately as well. So, really being educated.
Yeah, and even those can be used as a Band-Aid. Like I get calls all the time from family and friends and they're like, okay, I don't want to take the medication. What else can I take? So, you know, and then you start telling them an herb or a supplement. And then at the end, I always tell them, but you know, you need to find out why you're having that.
Yeah.
It's just because you're taking magnesium or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Until you know what's causing it, you know, and magnesium can be in a million supplements and it's very easy to overdose on that. And too high of a magnesium is also dangerous. So not just the deficiency. So any imbalance really is a problem, not just the deficiency. So.
Right, right. And it is still a pill for an ill, right? Mm-hmm. If we're just replacing yeah. the prescription with a supplement, yeah. it's not really necessarily looking at the root cause, which is typically lifestyle.
Yeah.
Lifestyle stress, lack of exercise, right. lack of sunshine,
yeah.
lack of nutrients.
You got that.
Well, I'm so grateful for the work that you're putting out into the world and that the information that you're offering people is so important and great presentation. Really, really nice and jam-packed full of really good stuff. Thank you. Do you want to tell anybody more about your website or what your services are?
My website is really like we're working on it. It's naturopathicpharmacist.com. So right now it's in shambles. I'm not mentioning it. But so the drugnutrients.com is just you can send it to anybody that wants to take a look at their medications and see if they have any kind of, if they're in danger of having any kind of nutrient depletions. So that's what this is about, the drugnutrients.com. But my big website where I have a blog and all that is naturopathicpharmacist.com. And again, I'm working on that one. In the last few years, I finally kind of found my niche, and I kind of figured like this is what I really want to do. So now I'm shifting pretty much everything I'm doing based on nutrient deficiencies and use that to look at the root cause of the symptoms. So I'm working on it. No, thank you.
Well, yeah, Marilyn says that you are an inspiration. Bless you. Your research is valuable to get out there. Thank you so much. Great presentation. This info is so needed. Thank you.
Thank you.
So yeah, really wonderful. And I applaud you for having the courage to speak out against the fact that sometimes drugs are not safe or appropriate, and that's kind of counterculture. But yet there is appropriate use of drugs at certain times. So we want to find the balance, get educated, and having resources like yours makes it possible for us to go do that and make informed decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to send you the slides, right? That's
yep, what. You can email them to me.
Okay.
And then I will get them to the person who will get them posted along with the replay. So you guys can all access it from the ERC site and watch the replay and get the presentation.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Well, thank you so much. Any other questions before we sign off? All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful evening.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Thanks, Kimberly, too.
Bye-bye. You're so welcome. You. Have a good evening. Bye-bye,
thank
everyone.
You, Kimberly.
You're welcome. Right. Good job, Mahalia. That was beautiful. Really nice.
Yeah. So do you want the slides as, so when I